Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. I have a special show today because I have live in the studio and on the phone members of the group The Realistics. So you guys want to say hi to the audience?
Hello, everybody. How you doing?
Hello, everybody. Hello.
And we have one more member. He said hi.
Jerome, you want to say hello?
He can hear. Yeah. He's on the air.
This is Jerome, and I want to say to the audience, hello. God bless you.
Okay, so first of all, you guys are from Gary, Indiana. Is that right?
Yes.
And
yes,
can you guys introduce yourselves? I guess first the people in the studio.
My name is Ronald Martinez. We also have Bobby Wilson here. Want to say hello, Bob?
Hey, how you doing?
And who do we have on the phone?
Jerome Gilbert.
Okay. We have Jerome Gilbert on the phone. Hello, everyone.
Okay, well, thanks so much for being down here and telling your story. So, first of all, you guys said, well, we said you guys were from Gary. Is there a specific part of Gary that you're from?
Oh, we're from the west side of Gary, the Tolleston area.
Okay. And there was a Tolleston High School that a lot of groups went to. And I had previously interviewed the Passions, and they were also from Tolleston High School, right?
We went to school with them.
What are some of the other artists from your school?
Denise Williams. Mm-hmm. Went to our school. We have had classes and stuff together. We were in band together, in fact.
Okay.
And as far as, I don't know of anybody else that was in the music field from there.
Just
the Passions.
Just the Passions.
And Denise.
Passions,
So, how did you guys, when did you guys form, how did you guys start singing?
Well, we all had ROTC together. And we were, it was about 1968, I believe, and we were all in ROTC room, and we were in charge of passing out the uniforms.
Okay.
And I didn't know Jerome at that time. I knew of him, but I really didn't know him. And Bobby knew Jerome, and they were singing together, just messing around, singing, Please Return Your Love to Me.
Okay.
And they were singing in the background. And I knew the song, but I was kind of real shy. So they kept singing, and finally I said, I'm just going to try it, and I jumped into the lead, and we blended.
Okay,
just like that.
So it's instant harmony.
Pushed him in there. Pushed him.
It worked. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
It was instant harmony. It was one named Charles Mickens. He had the bass. Pudgy had the first tenor. I had the baritone. Bobby had the second tenor. It fell in. It was like a miracle. All of us just blended in like hand in glove. It was beautiful.
So there were originally five members, is that
yes.
right?
Yes, there was myself, Ron Martinez, Bobby Wilson, Jerome Gilbert, James Roy, and Charles Mickens.
Okay, and were you guys all in ROTC class together, or did some of you meet each other later?
Yeah. No, we were all in ROTC.
ROTC.
Okay, so you described singing a Temptations song. Was that one of your big influences?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The Temptations, the Delphonics.
Oh, my goodness.
The Delphonics had a real big impression on us.
Yeah, because you had that 70s kind of falsetto sound
right.
in your records.
We also were big fans of the Dells.
Okay.
And, what's his name? Darling, oh.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Where'd you get that house?
Back, they sang Cowboys to Girls.
Yeah. The Intruders.
The Intruders.
Right.
Okay. So, you were singing When We Get Married?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so you guys just started singing together, and what years were you in school at that time?
Well, at the time we started singing, it was 1968. And I graduated, and James Roy graduated in 1969. And then the following year, Bobby and Jerome graduated.
So you were like juniors and sophomores, pretty
yeah.
much.
Mm-hmm.
And so were you also inspired by other local groups from your school, or did you battle them?
No, we kind of just were into what we were doing. We were good friends with the Passions.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they always, we would talk and they gave us, you know, advice and stuff. And because they had started before we did.
Okay.
And, but, you know, we pretty much kind of did our own thing.
So it was a few years before you actually started recording, right?
Like
so because your records came out, I think, around 73, 74,
right.
Sometime around there.
70?
No,
it was 73.
73?
Yeah. So what were you guys doing? Were you guys doing talent shows when you were in school?
Yeah, we did talent shows. We did a lot of political rallies.
Okay, what kind of political rallies were
there? Well,
they?
For Mayor Hatcher, when he was running for mayor of Gary, he had a group called the Mictuania.
Okay.
And we did a lot of...
the
diplomats. We did a lot of political rallies for them. And they were part of Mayor Hatcher's campaign group.
Okay. So you helped promote the mayor, for his shows? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that was after you were out of school or when you were still in school?
That was after we were out of school.
When you were in school, did you have a... Was there a Tolleson show or wasn't there an all-Gary talent show that started
at
some point?
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Okay.
There was the inner city, the whole citywide talent show at Memorial Auditorium in Gary, and
we whooped them.
We beat everybody.
Okay.
We beat everybody. We got the trophy, and that night we got our very first gig, and it was at a roadhouse. It was an illegal after hours joint.
Okay.
And out in what they used to call the small farms, and we went out there and we sang for them. One night, and they called us back and hired us for 8 weeks.
Okay.
And we were underage. We were still like 16, 15, and one time we were singing there, the place got raided.
That's right.
So that talent show, was it in 1968, around that time?
Yes. Yeah.
And was there a winner of the show? Like it was a contest?
Yes.
And you guys won first place in the show?
Yes, we did.
Did you guys have a band that played with you?
Yes, we did.
Who were the band?
The band was made up of Albert Sanchez, wonderful guitar player. Danny Rodriguez, he was the bass player. Albert was the lead guitar player. Hector Garcia was the drummer. And there was only three guys in the group.
And were they called just the Realistics Band? Did they have a name?
They started off as Greg and the Emperors, I believe. The Emperors. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And Greg got pushed out, and Realistics came in.
Okay, so their lead singer left, and they just became your band. You're saying?
Yes.
And how did you know them? Were you in school with them also?
No. We had a manager from our high school.
We had plenty of managers.
Oh yeah. But the way we met them was through a guy named Dale Robinson that went to school with us.
Okay.
And he said he knew this band that would fit us perfect. We had never met these guys. We didn't know them. So we went to the basement, of course, where everybody starts, you know, practicing. And they were playing. And we told them some of the songs that we knew. And we wound up doing a whole show in that basement. I mean, worth of songs. We just clicked.
Okay.
I mean, it was scary how... It was like we knew each other for years and that, like we had been playing together for a long time.
And that was like what year you got your band? Like 68 also, sometime around then?
Yeah, late 68.
So you guys started to do shows. You said you did political rallies and you did that talent show.
Right.
And did you do clubs
yes,
too?
Yes, like the Zodiac. We did the Zodiac.
Where was the Zodiac?
On 11th Avenue, just down the street from Mr. Lucky's. If anybody's from Gary, they know exactly. It's on the west side of Gary, just past Grant Street.
Okay.
And we sang at Clayman's Lounge on 15th Avenue across from Tolleson High School, a converted... It used to be a bowling alley, and they turned it into a nightclub. And the Tangier Lounge and the Masonic Temple...
And what did you start doing clubs while you were still in high school?
Yes.
Okay. And so did you continue to do music once you left school? You guys graduated like 69, 70,
right.
Around that time?
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I was the youngest one.
Yeah. Yeah, Bobby was the youngest.
Yeah, I was the youngest.
Okay. And so when you graduated...
Were you looking for a record deal? Like, what was the story?
Oh, we were always looking for a record deal. When we graduated, we started doing shows in earnest where we were starting to go out of town, and we started doing colleges. IU, Purdue, Vincennes University, Kentucky State.
Ball State.
Ball State. And we were going around to different clubs in Detroit and the Chicago area. And
that was the... what was that?
The Stage One was the one in
Stage
Detroit
one?
That we played at, yeah.
So how did you get onto that, like a lot of Indiana colleges too, how did you get onto that circuit? Did you just...
Well, people had heard us sing, and they were calling us. A lot of fraternities were calling us.
Right.
Okay. So you'd actually do shows at fraternities?
Yeah.
Oh.
Would you do shows with... Would you have like a review, or did you do shows with any other groups, or was it just you guys?
Mostly we were doing it by ourselves at the fraternities. It was just us.
Okay.
And we were, like, doing the show. We'd have our band, like, do instrumentals and warm the crowd up. But we wound up, we're the only ones on the show, so.
And so you guys just drove around in a van with you guys and your band, pretty much?
Yeah.
Just, like, seven guys?
Mm-hmm.
And you had, so did you still have your bass singer at that point?
No.
So when did you, what happened with the bass singer?
He decided that he wanted to sing in church.
Okay.
And we, of course, tried to talk him out of it. I mean, we didn't try to discourage him from singing in church, but to try to discourage him from quitting the group. But he became a choir director, and he said that that's where his heart was, so we wished him well, and that was about it.
And another question related to that is, on your records, you guys have a very 70s kind of falsetto, like stylistic, Delphonics type of sound.
Mm-hmm.
And that type of sound usually doesn't even have a bass in it in the 70s. So did you change your sound when the bass singer left, or did you guys always sound like that?
Always.
Always.
Okay.
Always.
Matter of fact, we as the Realistics evolved, you know, to Pudgy with that high pitch. Couldn't touch him. Can't touch him.
Okay.
Can't touch him.
And what we did, though, is like when we sang songs like, especially with the Philadelphia sound, like the Delphonics or anything like that, we always had the bass, you know, a lot of groups would have a real overpowering bass.
Yeah.
And we would have the bass, you know, stay in balance with us so there wasn't overpowering, because in the Philly sound, in the Delphonics especially, the first tenor, the second tenor, and the baritone are really... featured voices.
Okay.
And so the lower registers kept them fairly low so that it wouldn't overpower the top three.
Okay. And I'm going to play one of your records in a second so that the people know what we're talking about. But one thing I never asked you is, how did you get the name The Realistics?
That was Jerome.
Okay.
We were still, in fact, we named ourselves the very first day that we sang together.
Okay.
Because we decided to form a group right then and there. And we were thinking of all these names, and Jerome said, how about the Realistics? That was it.
Is that what you remember, Jerome?
Yes, that's what I remember, because I had the name already with me, and I always wanted a group that was real.
Okay.
And everyone in the group seemed to be real people. They were straight up with one another. It's like we came together in such a miraculous way. And I said, well, Realistic sounds like a good name for this group. And everyone accepted that and went along with it, and that was history.
Okay, great. Well, it definitely is surprising you just all met in one day and clicked. And had you guys had any singing background before? That's one other thing I forgot to ask. Like, had any of you sang in any other groups or even just... Any?
Yeah, no.
I had. I don't know about Bobby, but I had. Yeah.
Where what you sang with other high school groups before?
I sang with the first group I ever sang with was called the Lucky Seven, and it was with my ex-brother-in-law. He had a band, and I was there visiting my girlfriend. It was like the first time I visited at her home, and their band was playing in the basement, and they had some guy leading that was really bad,
really
awful, and so I went down in the basement with my girlfriend, and they were playing,
mm-hmm.
and she told them, she says, why don't you let him sing? He sings. And so they said, well, who the heck is he? So I introduced myself, and they played I Wish It Would Rain.
Okay.
And I sang it, and that was, I became the lead singer.
Yeah.
And so you were with them a short period of time.
Oh, no, I was with them for probably about 3 or 4 years.
Okay. And Bobby, had you sang with any other groups before?
No.
Did you sing just by yourself or in church or anything like that?
I was a realistic.
From the start. And Jerome, had you ever sang before?
Well, I was singing practically all my life. I did a lot of solos and different talent shows and stuff like that. I was basically a solo singer.
Okay. And what made you want to start singing harmony in a group?
Well, I always liked to get harmony, and always wanted a group. But it seemed like the guys that I was hanging around, they really couldn't sing. I wanted to sing with a group of guys that can. You didn't have to teach them their pitch. They already, it was like a given thing. And when we got together, everybody, it was like a given thing. Everybody fit right in. Everyone knew exactly what to sing from bass all the way to first tenor. You had to see that for yourself. It was so awesome the way we were brought together. You couldn't help but want to be a group after that.
Okay. So I'm going to play your guys' first record that you guys released, and then we can talk a little bit more. So this came out on Brunswick Records in 1973. This is called You're My Sweet Chocolate Drops.
All right.
Your deep, you made me very happy. Happy. And
Okay, that was just the Realistics with the very first record they cut in 1973 on Brunswick Records that was called You're My Sweet Chocolate Drops. And if you're just tuning in, I have in the studio right now members of the Realistics, two of them in the studio, one of them on the phone, talking about their music and their story. So before playing that record, we had talked about after high school, you guys had toured around and done like a college circuit. Were you guys doing that full time, or were you working and doing that on the side?
Both. Sometimes, you know, we'd be working and singing on the side. But if the work interfered with singing, we'd quit our jobs.
Okay. So you were really committed to to doing it at the time. So you guys had talked about how you had tried to get recording deals, but you weren't successful until, I guess, Brunswick Records.
Hold up.
Okay.
Pudgy and the Realistics. Pudgy was probably more than the piece that was in the puzzle.
Okay.
Okay. So at that time, that's just like seeing I would say, who was the other one again?
Well, one thing that we did too also is, like, we booked all our own gigs.
Okay.
All right. We booked all our own gigs, and we were managing ourselves.
Big time.
Okay.
And so we were very leery of managers.
Right.
And we finally, we learned not, actually we promoted ourselves.
Big
you know,
time.
We did the whole shot. And when we got to the point where we met Otis LaVille, there was a show at the Armory, the Gary Armory on 11th Avenue in Madison. And there was Bobby Hutton was there.
Okay.
Ronaldo Domino.
Okay.
Who else was there? I think Barbara Acklin was there.
Barbara Acklin.
A bunch of people.
Tyrone Davis.
Yeah, a bunch of people from the Chicago area and from Record Row.
Okay.
We're singing there, and we were on the show. And Otis LaVille came up to us and asked, well, who are you guys? I never heard of you guys, you know. But he liked us a lot. He said, how come I've never heard of you? And we sat up in the bleachers and we talked with him, and he invited us to come up to Brunswick. And that's how we got on Brunswick.
What year was that?
Well, that was like probably about 70, late 71, early 72.
Okay. So would you say that...
I'd say 71.
So would you say that you never had a record deal before, mainly because no one just discovered you in that way before?
Yeah.
And you just didn't have contacts with labels in the same way a manager, because you were managing yourselves?
Well, that, and I think a lot of people thought that we were recording, because we were opening up for a lot of big-name groups, like the Isley Brothers, the Spinners. We did a lot of shows with the Spinners. We opened for the Stylistics.
Where were some of the places you opened for those groups?
Most of them were in the Gary area. The Westside High School was bringing in a lot of name entertainers to their big gymnasium. They had a huge gymnasium, and we were doing shows with them.
Was that Westside?
Yeah, it was Westside. That was the main venue.
And did you had a program of a Temptation show? Did you ever open for the Temptations, or was that just a show you?
We visited the Temptations at Valparaiso University to see them at one of their shows, and I don't know how we did it. We talked their stage manager into letting us into their dressing room, and we talked with them for about an hour, and they sang with us. And we sang with them, and they let us all do a lead to one of their songs, and they background us. And then they'd do the leads, and we would background them. It was a wonderful experience, because they were our idols. You know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was.
So so you said that you ended up getting to Brunswick Records when Otis LaVille saw you at a show and talked to you and took you to Brunswick Records.
Right.
Did you sign a record deal at that time?
No. No, it took a while before we got signed, because there was a lot of groups that were trying to get in Brunswick, and we kind of had to wait our turn.
Right.
Plus, the Shy Lights were going off the charts with their songs. I mean, they were just really busy and, I mean, really popular at that time. So it took us a while before we got signed.
So what were you doing? Were you just staying in contact with them? Were you
coming to the studio every day, driving from Gary to the studio and just sitting in the office waiting for them to call us and see if we could talk to Carl Davis.
So did you have a manager at that time or still just
no.
You guys? So how did you get signed eventually? Did you talk to Carl Davis finally?
They finally called us in the office.
Okay.
And
so you were just hanging out there a lot?
Just waiting.
Rolls Royces and everything else.
Carl let us drive his Rolls Royce one time. That was neat.
So he signed you, and did you sign a deal to do two records, or what did you what did?
Yeah, we signed to do a couple of 45s, and then eventually an album.
Okay.
And we did, on the B-side of Sweet Chocolate Drop.
How Can I Forget You?
I Forget You? Jerome sang lead on that. And later on, they made a long version of How Can I Forget You on, like,
a 12-inch.
Like on an
album. A 12-inch,
right.
Yeah. It was released in the late 70s, right?
Right.
So
that's you.
Yeah, so anyway.
In St. Louis.
No.
I was never in
St. Louis.
Never in St. Louis.
No.
Sorry.
it might have been.
But I heard. I don't have it. But I heard that they released in the late 70s a 12-inch.
Yeah,
or
a long
I
version
you.
Of it. Right, and that was as close as we got to the album.
Okay, so what year did you sign the record deal? Was it 72?
We signed in 72. And then we made Chocolate Drop in 73. We released it, I believe, in 73.
So did you record it in Chicago?
Yeah, at Brunswick's Records.
Yeah.
And who wrote the record?
I did.
Okay. And
I even know who engineered it.
Who engineered it?
Bruce Sweden.
Okay.
And his assistant was Craig Barksdale.
Okay. Yeah, his name is on a lot of records as engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And so... You released the record, and did it become a hit?
Locally, I believe it did. We really never knew how far it went, because they told us that it was very popular overseas. But we weren't really told exactly where we were at with that.
It was on the Billboard magazine.
We had been in Billboard.
Yeah, you showed me. Was it that record or the other record with the Billboard?
No, that one was. I take that back. I think I'll Cry Aloud was on Billboard, but Sweet Chocolate Drop was in Record World.
Okay.
But I couldn't find that article that I looked for. I couldn't find it.
But I know it got some local play in Chicago. Like I play it on my show sometimes, and people will call up saying they remember that song. So, and did you get play in Gary?
Yes.
Okay, so did the Brunswick connection enable you to get more shows or do bigger things?
Oh, yes.
So what were some of the bigger things you did after that?
Well, we played at the Dorchester Inn I believe it was South Holland, and the night before, Frank Sinatra had been there. And we also played in the Grand Ballroom. The biggest gig, I consider the biggest gig, was playing in the Grand Ballroom with the Palmer House.
Okay,
so we were real proud of that.
And did you? What was your shows like at that time? Do you have the same band still?
No, we had switched to a different band. Our first band had went their separate ways, and from us, and we had another band.
And did you do shows with Brunswick artists, or was it mainly still just you guys?
We didn't do a lot of shows with the Brunswick artists. We did some with the Shy Lights. We did some with Tyrone Davis. We did one, I think, with the Lost Generation. I'm not sure if we did or not, but I think we were on a book. Yes, when we did the show with the Shy Lights, the Lost Generation was on the bill, too.
Yeah.
Okay. So you released one more record on Brunswick, which I'm going to play in a second. It's called I Think I'll Cry Out Loud, and I think it came out in 1974, is that right?
Yes. But, you know, there's one thing about Chocolate Drop. the day that we recorded Chocolate Drop, I had buried my father. So I had to go from my father's funeral and try to sing on a recording. That was one of the most difficult times, if not the most difficult time for me to sing in my life. Because I got there an hour after we buried my dad.
Yeah, it must have been a difficult experience.
Yes, it was.
The record turned out sounding good, though.
I'm glad it did.
So I'm going to play your guys' second record that you released. This is called I Think I'll Cry Out Loud, and we will talk a little bit more after this.
All right.
So this is The Realistics from 1974 on Brunswick Records with I Think I'll Cry Out Loud. Okay, that was just The Realistics with their second record from 1974 called I Think I'll Cry Out Loud, and that also came out on Brunswick Records. So you guys had, did you guys cut, the, you didn't guys, you didn't cut the two records at the same session, did you?
No.
And did you, I know the B-side of that was a song called You and Me.
Right.
Did you guys only ever record those four songs, or did you record anything that was not released at Brunswick?
No, that those were the only ones that that we recorded that I know of, that I can remember. That we didn't do anything else.
So, what was the story at Brunswick Records like? Why was it really hard to get recorded and get your material out? You had to push for it.
Yes.
What's the story with that?
Carl Davis was a good person, okay, but he messed up a lot of people's.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think what happened with that is that they had a lot of artists.
Okay.
They had, to sum it up, that there was too many irons in the fire.
Okay.
And they couldn't concentrate on the groups that they had. They were concentrating, like, on the Shy Lights and the Barbara Acklin, Tyrone Davis, the Artistics. But the other groups, like the Channel 3, as an example, they were recording their wonderful group.
Yeah, they were like, we were just a tax write-off. That's what they kind of like.
Well, I don't know about that part. They were a very good group. I really liked their song that they came out with.
The Sweetest Thing.
Sweetest Thing.
Yeah.
And really nice harmony on that. And but I think that the lesser known groups, really, there was so many that we just had to kind of scratch tooth and nail to get in, you know, to try to get our stuff.
And you still didn't have a manager at that time?
Well,
no, I'm in Washington now.
Yeah, we had a manager, sort of, Raymond Haley.
Okay.
I think the Channel 3 mentioned in their interview about Raymond Haley.
Okay.
And he was in charge of, like, the songwriting, you know, getting copyrighted and getting belonging to ASCAP and all that. And he was basically kind of promoting us, but he wasn't really our contract manager.
Exactly.
Okay. So, kind of within Brunswick, all the artists had to, like, push themselves to get recorded because there were so many of them.
Yes.
And, Bobby, what were you saying about just now, about Washington?
Oh, he had went to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And when he was in Washington, D.C., he was trying to figure out a way that we could get back together after the group had broke up.
Oh, that was late. That was later.
Oh, that was later, yeah. But, you know, it...
Well, I'll ask about that in a second. I just want to get through the stuff that you did record while you were at Brunswick. So, had you guys ever done any TV appearances?
Yeah.
Yeah. The old Soul Train with Big Bill Hill.
It was a Channel 26 Chicago show.
And we performed Chop the Drop on there.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was probably...
No, because we did it. Yeah, we did it. Okay, when we did it, it was uniformed and everything.
Yeah, we had the matching outfits and the same shoes, and all white shoes and ruffled shirts.
Okay, and that was in 73. You appeared on the local Chicago Soul Train.
Right.
And you... Clint Gent wasn't the host that day. Big Bill Hill was the
right.
host. Okay. And did you guys ever do... So, and pretty much, did you tour outside of... Like, did you ever travel anywhere else farther once you were on Brunswick Records?
No.
Okay.
No.
But you continued to do shows around that time, but locally. Did you mainly do shows in Gary, or did you do a lot of shows in Chicago, too?
Well, we sang for quite a while at Peyton Place.
Okay.
It was on, I want to say, 39th in Indiana, something like that.
Okay.
We would play there periodically, and we did some shows at the Burning Spear.
Okay. And so pretty much you were living in Gary and just driving in Chicago every day?
Yes.
Okay. And so one thing I wanted to ask you guys about is you guys did some work backing, some like session studio work backing some other singers, is that right?
Yes.
What are some of the things that you did?
Well, we did background for Robert Dobine, who was a singer with the Artistics. We did spend a lot of years. We did the background for that. And we did a background for Gene Shy. But I cannot remember for the life of me the name of the song.
Yeah, I know she cut two records for Brunswick Dakar Records, so maybe it was one of those records. Do you know how you ended up doing the background work? Like, I noticed Otis LaVille's name is on the Robert Dobine record.
Well, it was through Otis. Otis asked us to do it.
Okay. So, and the Robert Dobine record came out in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
So, and did you do any other session work besides those two artists, or those are the two you remember?
Those are the only two that we did work for.
Okay. Let me play the Robert Dobine record that you guys sing backup on.
Okay.
And we could talk a little bit more. So this is Robert Dobine with Spend a Lot of Years Loving You. So that was just Robert Dobine, who was one of the lead singers of the Artistics. He's a guy that sings on I Want You to Make My Life Over. I always thought that song is funny because he says honey, like honey, in the same way on both records.
he was kind of what we call country.
Okay.
In a way. Very nice man. Very nice
man.
Real
nice guy.
But you could tell he was from the South.
And that, again, the backing group on that is the Realistics, who we have in the studio now talking about their music. So that was one of two records they backed. They also backed an artist named Gene Shy. So pretty much the last record you guys released was in 74, and I know they released a 12-inch on How Can I Forget You, like in 77, something like that.
Yeah.
Like a long version. So how long did you guys stay together after the record came out in 74?
Well, our official breakup was actually in 75.
Okay.
But we stayed in contact with each other.
Did you just kind of drift apart or stop doing...
Well, we were getting older and we were raising families. We had started to have children.
Okay.
And it presented a problem for us, you know, and kind of we had to make a very difficult choice.
Yeah, that's a story with almost everyone I talk to is, you know, you do it for so long and then you have to sort of go on with your life.
Yes, and we were getting at that age where we had, you know, we were getting at that crossroads that are you going to stick with this or do you have to really think about the future? And that's what happened.
And Bobby had mentioned being in D.C.
Yeah.
When was that?
I went and went general manager for Toyota.
Okay, in Washington, D.C.?
D.C.,
And you had tried to get the group back together at some point?
I was trying my best.
Man.
Okay.
He was calling us up all the time, and, you know, there was a difficulty because everybody else was in Gary. Well, one of us, James Roy, was in Milwaukee, but Jerome and I were in Gary, and Jerome, you know, he had his job, and I had my job, and we couldn't do it.
Jerome had a lot of babies.
Okay.
Jerome's got quite a few kids, yeah.
He has a lot of babies.
So have any of you done... So another thing is that Brunswick released that 12-inch in 1977. Did you guys know about it at the time that they released the 12-inch?
Yes, yeah, we were in contact with each other that just in case anything clicked, we would get back together again.
And they released it as like a long kind of disco mix?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Does it sound the same? It's just longer? Do they actually remix it?
It sounds the same. It's just longer.
How can I forget?
Right.
And so did any of the guys do any music stuff since you guys stopped? Like any solo stuff or any other involvement with music?
Well, I continued singing. I went with this group called Burgundy.
Okay.
And I sang with them for about 8 years.
Were they a Gary group also?
Yeah, it was just a local group, and we played locally.
Did you guys ever record?
No.
Okay. And Bobby, did you ever do any other music stuff?
And you know what? I was on that Washington D.C.
Okay, so you were on your career in D.C.
Exactly.
And Jerome, did you ever do any other music?
Yes, I did. I began to start writing songs myself. I started to sing in choirs and different gospel groups, and I began to write songs and. Matter of fact, I put out a CD, and I've been singing gospel music since then.
When did your CD come out?
My CD actually came out last year.
Okay, and so it's a gospel CD.
It's a gospel CD.
What's the CD called?
The CD is called "Every Day in Christ Is a New Thing."
Okay, and can people find it on the internet, or are you just distributing it yourself, pretty much?
Just distributing it myself.
Okay. And so at least you guys, you know, put out a few great records while you were still together.
Right. Thank you.
And so do you guys have any last words for the listening audience?
Yes, we do. We're very thankful that Bob gave us the opportunity to tell our story. It's kind of been burning inside us for 35 years. And we'd also like to thank the people of Chicago and Chicagoland period for remembering our songs. I was really surprised when Bob said that he had callers that had remembered our song, and that's very flattering to us, especially after all these years. And thank you, Chicagoland.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for coming down.
Thank you, Bob.
It was a pleasure.
Okay, well, this last record that I'm going to play is the B-side of the Realistic second record. This track is called You and Me.
You.
together.